so much, Mark and Dean. Before we go into questions, I just want to make one small comment, which is that all of this discussion is bringing up for me the fact that this summer we actually were in danger of having this model actually increasingly codified of deregulation of the financial sector through the WTO negotiations. And you all know that there are in the WTO negotiations on industrial tariffs, agriculture, and the third pillar is in services. And within the services negotiations, the major goal of the United States is to get more countries to agree to put their financial services sectors under discipline of WTO, which means preventing them from being able to implement the type of policies that we're talking about today to deal with the financial crisis. They're talking about within the WTO, if they would subject their financial services sectors, then being prevented from implementing those policies. And because the negotiations failed to conclude this summer in Geneva, obviously we're still fighting that. They're still trying to expand the WTO, but because they failed this summer, we're not faced with that problem of having some of that policy space curtailed so that countries still have that ability to do so. So with that additional caution, I'd like to open it up for questions. Please.
Oh, and we have...
We are actually recording this, and it will be available on the web afterwards. And so if you could please use the mic also, which Becky will be handing out. Thank you.
I would like to reinterpret the word failure. If you say failure, is the reference is... helping the developing countries, but they didn't failure recovering the investments of these creditor cartels. There was a big transfer of money from developing countries to most developed countries. So in this sense, was not a failure. So to interpret failure is always a reference to some fixed point.
No, I think that's true, partly. I mean, they sure didn't recover it in Argentina. They defaulted on $100 billion of debt and paid about a third of it. So they did, though, they recovered more of it in Asia. And it does, of course, depend on your goals, what you consider failure. I was looking at it from the point of view of development and the interests of the majority.
Hi, just two quick questions. Dean, you were talking about a stimulus package, and I was wondering if you could define what you meant as opposed to what one would hear from other sources who have other interests at heart. And secondly, do you think that there's any opportunity now for any kind of structural changes that could advance economic democracy in the country at all? And the quick question for you, Mark, it might be interesting to just share a little bit about how the globalization of finance has contributed to the mess we're in now, if you don't mind. Thank you so much.
Okay, structure, stimulus, I mean, you know, you still want to, I was on a panel yesterday, I said, you know, usually the concern with stimulus is can you spend money quickly, and, you know, one advantage we have this time is we're likely to be faced with a long recession, so we don't have to worry so much about that. But you still, I mean, the idea is what can you do reasonably quickly? Well, a few things. One is get money to state and local governments. So the Post just had an article today about how Virginia's planning all these big cutbacks. Everyone is across the country. They all have very constrained state and local governments. They're going to be laying off workers, cutting back services. You don't want to see that in the middle of a downturn, so get a lot of money to state and local governments so they don't have to do that. Secondly, you know, a lot of infrastructure programs, projects that have been put on hold or sitting on the shelf, you could bring those forward. But the most important thing I'd like to see done is to really try and promote a green stimulus to try to, you know, do something that will have a lasting benefit. So there's a lot of things we could do. The most obvious thing are retrofitting buildings to make them more energy efficient, promote public transit. There's a lot of things we could do like that that would have real lasting benefits and money that could be spent quickly. So, you know, that's the direction I'd like to see us go with that. And again, I think we really have to do talk about big numbers. I know it sounds scary to people, say $300 or $400 billion, but, you know, we're looking at a serious downturn, so I do think we have to talk about numbers like that. The second question, economic democracy, boy, I sure hope we could do something. I mean, it was remarkable to me. Some of you may have caught this. The front page of the New York Times is about two Sundays ago. There's an article talking about when Paulson made the decision to keep AIG, rescue AIG, keep them from going under. He had the current CEO, you know, of course, he's the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. They had the current CEO of Goldman Sachs in the room at the time. The reason why that matters is AIG owed Goldman Sachs $20 billion. Now, maybe there's nothing improper. Maybe Henry Paulson made the exact same decision, but that really stinks. I mean, you got the guy who stands to lose $20 billion in the room with you going, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's, you know, that's not the way decisions should be made. So if we could do something to, you know, kind of open up the process. I mean, one of my pet things, just an easy and I think obvious thing is, you know, why are banks, why do they have a special say in the Federal Reserve Board policy? I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I won't go into details here, but basically if 12 people decide monetary policy, the monetary policy of the United States conducted by the Federal Reserve Board, I should say 12 people voting, you have at any point in time 19 people in the room. 12 of those 19 are basically appointed by the banks. 5 of the 7 people voting are basically appointed by the banks. I can't understand any rationale for that. You know, they're concerned about monetary policy, so are we all. They don't have any special interest in it.
Yeah, that's a very important point in terms of democratization. And it would be it seems like a small reform, but it would take a big fight to get that. In terms of the globalization of finance, I think one way, of course, that the globalization of finance has affected the current crisis is the spread of these bad mortgage-backed securities and other derivatives, especially the huge credit default swap market around the world. I think certainly that's one element in terms of globalizing the problem. The other aspect of it, I think, if you go back, you know, even to the 90s in some a lot of countries, Brazil, for example, they had capital controls, and it was much easier for countries to deal with a crisis like this. So because finance is globalized and these have been removed, it's harder. You see countries find that their country risk, which is their basically the interest rate spread on their bonds, goes up in a time like this, even if they haven't necessarily done anything wrong. And they become vulnerable to some degree. Now, so far, it hasn't been that bad, but that part of it could get worse.
Thank you. All the news this morning.